Welcome, everybody, to the PFF College Football Podcast. I'm Seth Galina, alongside Deontay Lee, as always. Deontay, what's going on?
Not much, man. California has restarted football, so, you know, I've been talking to some of the people that we work with at PFF. Obviously, my workload is kind of changing right now, so try to get all of that sorted out, installing defense, getting ready for scrimmages, games, and all that good stuff, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. No football in the near future here in Montreal, Quebec. I was talking to a friend who coaches a university football, and I was like, look, clearly you're not going to have any type of spring ball, any type of thing like that. But I was like, by August, like for sure you guys are in pads outside. And he was like, yeah, that's what we thought last year. So he's like, you would assume that, but no one knows at this point. Though I would imagine that by August, no one played this year in Canada. No one played football in Canada this year. The 2020, fall season, and no one's playing in the spring. I don't believe, definitely not in Quebec. So everyone's just kind of, I guess, getting ready for August and trying to get out of this fucking negative 8 degrees Celsius weather.
Yeah.
All right. We have a great interview lined up with quarterback coach of the Stars, Quincy Avery. He joined us to talk about everything quarterback, talk about the guys that he's coached, obviously Deshaun Watson and a few other guys, and then how quarterback coaching has evolved, how he got into the business and all that stuff. Very good interview. Excited to get to it. But first, our weekly breakdown, our defensive breakdown. We said we're going to do offensive stuff, and we will. We'll do that next week. I'll get a nice Sean Payton four verts thing to talk about next week. But this week, you are PFF underscore over six bump Bronco. Take the floor.
All right. So start with over. All of you guys should know over. At least I would hope that most people would know over fronts, but maybe that's me.
I don't even I barely
maybe know I'm being presumptuous fronts. Because now I'm like completely back in coaching brain. So I'm starting to assume that everybody knows this type of stuff. Over front. So you're setting the three technique. So think of Aaron Donald. That guy would be to the side of the tight end. If there's a tight end, if there's no tight end, he'd be to the field in most defenses, unless you have some kind of special rule set up. So you have two ends, two defensive tackles, cover six. So that's the next piece. Cover six is not the way that I think a lot of people may like chart cover six, if you're thinking about the data analytics world. Cover six in the coaching world is weak side rotation, cover three. At least it is if you are a cover three team. And by weak side rotation, that means that we are rotating away from the Sam, the star. So wherever all of the receivers are, we're rotating the safety away from them down into the flat. And we're playing cover three principles. This coverage is from the Saban, Belichick, Kirby Smart, Jeremy Pruitt, that whole family of defensive guys. So for the most part, when they're playing it with what's called ripless principles, meaning that they're just carrying guys up the seam. Okay, so the way that a lot of people should be familiar with cover three. The bump Bronco stuff, those are like the coverage checks based on how the offense lines up. So if the offense is in 3-by-1, then it turns into what's called skate, which is just kind of like a pure zone style of cover three. Like your dad's, your grandfather's version of cover three, where the underneath droppers are just buzzing out to space, settling underneath the receiver, and then playing off of the vision of the quarterback. I won't get into the three up is three rule because that is like 20 minutes in its own. And I don't want to spend time on that. Same with like the four to first crosser. Don't want to spend time on that. If you guys are actually interested in all those rules, there are podcasts for it with other coaches. I won't plug them because I don't know what PFF's relationship is with plugging other podcasts, but if you follow me, you probably follow the people that I'm talking about and they can definitely inform you. And then Bronco, which is the last piece, that's just what happens if the offense is in what Saban and those guys call a tray set, which means that there's a nub tight end on one side and then three receivers on the opposite side. And all Bronco means is that the strong safety is basically becoming another underneath player instead of the middle of field player. And instead of rotating to the weak side, now the two linebackers play the two underneath zones to the weak side. So the corner that is outside of the tight end on an upside, he plays his quote unquote third. It's really more like man. The next linebacker inside of him would have the flat drop. They call it forward to first crosser. The next linebacker, now he's the one on the strong side. So the Mike backer, he would have the three up is three rule. So he's a hook player. Strong safety is the next hook player. The star, the Sam, would be the flat dropper. You still have your corner on a deep third out to the strong side. And now the weak safety becomes the middle of field safety. So it's just an adjustment where everybody kind of bumps over one job or one responsibility. But that is over six bump Bronco.
So one of the things, so this is just like, look, when it comes down to it, I know you did a whole bunch of explaining, so I'm going to oversimplify it in 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's cover three.
Cover three, guys. That's it. It's cover three.
But I think the interesting thing about the verbiage is just like defensively, you're always in a reactionary spot, right? And I think you always have to have these calls in there. I mean, we know this, but you have to have the calls that tell you what you're going to do against certain formations. And I'm not sure, you know, in the Saban world or anyone else's world, if that changes week to week. So you're saying, hey, maybe this week, you know, when we get, you know, we're in cover three, we want to play cover three, but we want to do it this way to trips. We want to do it this way to 2x2. And I think that is probably the most important thing is having a plan that can change, that can adapt based on the offense, based on the motion. I know obviously, you know, one of the things in Canada that I've been thinking about a lot is like a lot of this stuff you can't, that we talk about doesn't really exist in my football that I grew up playing and coaching because the motion changes so quickly that, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where you're saying, okay, when they do this, we check to this, when they do this, we check to this, because they do a lot and you don't know what it's going to be right before the snap. So it's a problem. Anyways, just being able to check to the right calls every time based on formation and based on motion. So there you go. That's a way that Nick Saban calls his weak side rotated cover three.
Yeah. And having these adjustments are important. Otherwise you end up with Tough Borland carrying Devontae Smith up the seam in a national championship game. And that's not good for anybody.
Was that like, when I think about it, I was thinking about this today. Was that the defining play in college football in 2020?
Yeah, I think that, like, if you're looking for the you can't play defense like that anymore play, that's the play.
Yeah, that's it. All right. So that's enough from us. And we will get you to this interview with the great Quincy Avery in just a moment. All right, so joining us now live from the front seat of his car is Quincy Avery, quarterback coach of the Stars. Quincy Avery, welcome to the PFF College Football Podcast.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Where are you heading right now?
I'm heading to a private quarterback training session, and I'm fresh off of the golf course.
Oh, come on, man. It's like, and I say this every time, but it's like it's snowing here. So, like, I don't want to be hearing this stuff right now.
It's 72 and sunny here.
Yeah, Seth wants to know about how much his life sucks. That's why he asks. That way he can get reinforced about how much he hates where he's at.
When you obviously, like, you know, you're going to these, you know, quarterback sessions and stuff, how many kids do you normally have? Not necessarily kids, but how many quarterbacks do you normally have in these sessions?
It all ranges on, like, the type of session. So if I have, like, an NFL or a pro session, there'll be roughly four guys there. Three to four, really depends on what I'm dealing with. And then for draft prep, we had three guys this past offseason, and I've done three the last two pre-draft sessions. And then if I'm doing, like, a large high school group, upwards of 20. So it really depends on, like, who I'm dealing with, what's going on.
What is there a preference to you? Do you like the smaller groups or do you like the bigger groups where you get just a bunch of guys throwing all the time?
I think really cool, really good number. The number that you can probably do the most instruction is probably like 2 to 3. Sure. You also get to see other really good guys do things, right? So if I'm having a pro session with three NFL level quarterbacks, you get to see somebody else who's really talented do something that you may be able to learn from, right? So the information is not just coming from me coaching, but you're also being able to generate some information and kind of like a group think between you and the other quarterbacks.
So you played quarterback growing up, and now you've coached all these big time quarterbacks. You've been around the position now at such a high level, like you said, learning from other people. Do you think if you went back, like, do you think you could go in there? I know you, cause you tweeted this stuff before, but do you think, cause you know, all these people, you've coached this stuff. You think you could go and go like 5 for 9 in an NFL game?
5 for 9, probably not. But I also think that if I got 20 passes, that I would just have a really good idea how to find a completion. Like, it wouldn't be an aggressive passing attempt. I'd be able to get to like a check down, or I'd be able to throw stick and get to the right spot. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, if I get to call my own game, I'll be able to go 5 for 10 for 20 yards, get to some backs, yeah, stuff like that.
I think that's the main thing is, like, yeah, you get 5 completions, but they're going to be, you know, all behind the line. It's like the over the ball check down 5 straight times because, yeah, there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll be able to figure something out. Like, I've done this long enough.
Yes, sir. Check wide all day.
What? So you grew up playing football, of course. I read that your dad was a quarterback at University of Minnesota, and you wanted to play quarterback. It didn't really work out necessarily in like for the team. I think you wanted to play for Minnesota. They didn't want you at quarterback. You end up going to Morehouse, I believe. So what is that story like? You're from your high school career. What type of quarterback were you in high school, and how did you get to your college football?
Yeah, high school, I was a pretty good high school quarterback, like high completion percentage. Wasn't a great player, but I was fairly athletic, so I could do some stuff. So I could have played receiver in college. Decided I really wanted to play quarterback. So I went to a smaller school with my sights set on like being the quarterback of the team. And then I got there, it was going pretty well. I had a couple older guys in front of me, and I just wanted to get on the field. Ended up playing receiver, did really well when I first got out there. And I'm just like, receiver's cool. And then I thought I could make it to the NFL, but that was a pipe dream. Didn't end up doing that. And then I got done at Morehouse. I'm like, all right, well, I want to coach some football. So I drove to UCLA and sat on the couch. So they gave me a job.
I hear that. So for you, that actually brings up an interesting question for me, since you work with quarterbacks. And I mean, the guys you're working with at this point are obviously quarterbacks with real potential, if not already pros. But for you, maybe as an evaluator, if you had to put that hat on, when do you think you would sit down with a kid and say, hey, I know you love this position, and I'm not saying that you are not capable of playing the position, but you might have to look at, you know, an alternate route if you're really looking to maximize your football experience. Like, what is there anything from a skills perspective, mentality perspective, you know, kind of like, where is that line you draw where a kid just, you don't think will hack it at the position?
It really depends on like what their goals are, right? Like, if a kid's goal is to be a high school quarterback, then I mean, I feel like I can make anybody a relatively good high school quarterback, you know?
Right.
The kid's goal to be like, I want to make it to the NFL, then we could quickly kind of determine like, oh, you don't have the arm strength, or you don't have the mental makeup, or, you know, your ability to respond to adversity is not something that's ideal for somebody who's trying to play in the NFL, right? So there's all those different things that could be barriers to you being really successful, but your goals are really important, and making sure that you really want to play the position and it's not something that your parents want you to do.
Right.
What's the youngest that you get out there in your groups?
Well, my groups is kind of funny because I own a whole company that has a bunch of different coaches. Right. So if somebody wanted to come to me, they maybe end up coming to my company and they'd be as young as third or fourth grade. Right. So those kids could be a member of the quarterback takeover family. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't see them until they were like seventh or eighth grade. And I'll see really good seventh, eighth graders out here. I got some who I think like this kid should play in the NFL, and they're only in eighth grade now.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. So you've now, like Deontay said, you've coached some of the bigger names that are coming up now in the NFL and college football. Obviously, Deshaun Watson is like probably the biggest one, considering how big Deshaun Watson is. I was curious, can we go through, let's say, five of the guys here that you've coached that are working with now, either going to the draft or playing the NFL, and give me like a little synopsis of each one, really like, you know, the quarterbacking skill, maybe some of their, like you said, mental makeup, that type of thing. So let's start with Deshaun. What do you think he's like really, really good at? Like, what is the best thing about Deshaun Watson on the field?
Everything. No, I'm just joking. I think Deshaun is obviously a really phenomenal player, right? But I think this year he took real strides in his decision making, right? I think people have a really tough time beating him with pressure. And then he does such a phenomenal job extending plays that he makes it very stressful on you as a defensive coordinator. Like, if you watch some of the games versus the Colts, they're trying to play too high and only rush four. And it's just like he extends the play and makes big splash plays. And that's really difficult to defend from someone like that, who's not only can beat you with his mind if you bring pressure, but then also has the ability to extend plays and pick you apart in that way.
I think that I'm going to ask you the opposite, which is, what do you think he needs to improve on? Now, the problem is, you're talking about the guy who was, and I wrote this article recently, like talking about one of the best quarterback seasons of all time. So I don't know if there's so many things that you can improve on, but you know, when you get together with him, what are some of the things that you are looking to do?
That's kind of funny. Cause like, I mean, me and him have definitely got, like, we talked about some like areas of improvement. I have a hard time sharing like those specific details, because
yeah, of course.
if this is something like broad or general, like, hey, I think Deshaun needs to do a better job of seeing the blitz and understanding safety rotation so that he can make better decisions. Then I feel really good about sharing that, because that's something obvious that other people see, but the details and things that he has to work on are so small and so finite that it's pretty tough to share with everybody, because then they start trying to pick those things apart. If that makes sense.
No, I've heard. I was hoping to get anything out of you, because I've heard Tom House say the same thing. Like, hey, look, I'm talking about Tom Brady and Drew Brees here. I'm talking about Deshaun Watson. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on. What about a guy who's had a shaky start to his NFL career, Dwayne Haskins? Now he's in Pittsburgh. What are the things that, you know, obviously, again, shaky start, but there's got to be some things that you really like that you see out of him when you watch him play.
Yeah, so Dwayne still has the most arm talent of anybody that I've seen. And I'm not sure that everybody's got a chance to really see that. Like, that hasn't jumped out and everybody hasn't been able to see that on the field. But you'll see sometimes that'll make some throws. And you're like, that was a really – now I understand, like, why he was a first-round pick, right? You can see some of those. And that will excite you, right? And that's – there's only so many people in the NFL who can do some of the things that he does in that way. And that's what I love to see from him. And I'll be very honest, Dwayne has to improve with his decision-making, right? On and off the field. He's just got to do a better job of making decisions. When things start happening fast and they start speeding him up in games, he's got to be able to get them to some completions, and he's got to be able to move the sticks. So I think that that will be the biggest determining factor in how successful he gets to be in the NFL. If he can do that, then I'm really confident that he'll be able to turn around his NFL career.
Okay, last pro guy before we get to some of the college guys that are coming out this year. Jalen Hurts, you work with him?
Mm-hmm. Work with Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts, I think some of the things he did coming in, not being like the starter for long, not having many opportunities to really practice with the team, and still show like promise. Like, he still did some good things that flashed enough to make Carson Wentz really disgruntled, right? And want to get out of there. Now, I think
disgruntled is an understatement.
Now, what Jalen has to work on is being able to play on time and work through the progressions. Not that he doesn't see it, but he's got to start anticipating things a little bit better. And I think that, I mean, I know he knows it, and I know that he wants to be really good at those things. And what's going to be allow him to like not only do that, but take his game to the next level is just getting the checkdowns. I'm not sure how many backs he hit in checkdown situations, but that'd be something really interesting to see. I don't think he got to it a lot, right? And if you start getting to that checkdown, getting to that back, that elevates your completion percentage from whatever it was, low 50s to the 60, 62, 63. And then that starts, at least people start to perceive you in a different way. But we know that when you can start doing those and finding those easy completions, the game gets a lot easier and the defenses are going to have to defend you in a different way.
Right. So for the college guys that you've been working on, somebody that I've watched and had to cover a little bit throughout the past year or so has been Justin Fields at Ohio State. So for him kind of going through this pre-draft process, what have you seen from him on the field that has really been promising to you?
You know, I've worked with Justin for a very long time. I worked with him since he was in eighth grade, but we didn't do the draft prep together. It would have just got a little cloudy with having Trey and Jamie here so much earlier because they opted out for their senior season. But I've seen his ability to I think that his arm strength, I've seen that question sometimes, and that's confusing because he has a tremendous amount of arm strength. Like, that is one of his strengths. I think he's been banged up a little bit, so people haven't been able to see truly how athletic he is.
Yeah.
I really think that he'd be a high 4.4, low 4.5, like very, very low 4.5 guy if he had the opportunity to, run at his pro day and do some of those things and display those talents. So, physically, in terms of those physical gifts and talents, he's as gifted as anybody. And then I see people questioning his ability to work the progressions, right? Get the second and third reads. For one, I think it's foolish. I heard people say that we only saw him get off of number one 7 times for the whole season, which just isn't true. But I think that he also plays for a head coach in Ryan Day, who does such an excellent job in scheming guys open, that he encourages his quarterbacks to stay there for a little bit longer than maybe some other guys would. And I think that you have to have that trust in Ryan Day because he's really done a good job in doing so. So I think some of the knocks on him are a little bit unwarranted. They also see one of the big things is people see him take 2 and 3 hitches to his first progression, right? And they get concerned because they think that's staying there too long. But their college system doesn't necessarily time up their drops in the same way that NFL teams do, right? If it's a one hitch, like that's not the same case for Ohio State. So right. I think people get confused when they watch the tape, but I'm really encouraged about his future.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here. I've beat this drum all year long, so I get it.
I've seen what you guys have been writing, so I appreciate it.
The other guy that you've been working with that's prominent as far as quarterbacks coming out this year has been Trey Lance from North Dakota State. Obviously, you know, for the people who are maybe more casual or aren't super deep into college football, they probably have not had a lot of access to watching his games. So when you're with him on the field, what are like some of the attributes you see from him that make him so promising to you?
I mean, everything. Trey is really the quarterback that you would want to have in 2021. His arm strength, the ability to move, the ability to run fast, the ability to run through people. Like if you cut on his college tape, it looks like a highlight tape every time he gets the opportunity to drop back and make a throw.
Yeah.
He's also has done a great job of avoiding turnovers, right? I mean, that's obvious. He went through a whole season with not one interception, and that is a feat of itself, but his decision-making is really unquestioned. And then the things that they ask him to do at North Dakota State is unlike anywhere else in all of college football. He's asked to, so for example, they'll give him like a play call, like, I don't know, Trey Wright. Trey's like a 3x1. I'm saying Trey Wright, but at the end of the year, it makes it 60 combo, Fresno, Trey, right? 60 combo. They're telling Trey, you figure out the protection yourself. You figure out what side we're going to based on the safeties, based on alignment, based on the stacks and tandems of the defense, right? So he figures out his own protection, and if they look like they're bringing more to one side, then he has the opportunity to change it to a 7-man protection, whatever the case may be. And then they'll give him half of a concept. They'll call Fresno, but on the backside of it, they're saying, Trey, you handle and you figure out what we want to do on the backside of that, right? There's no college guy in the country who is tasked with doing more at the line of scrimmage than Trey Lance. So he's prepared already to do the dirty work. He's also the same guy who will go into his Friday passing game meeting, and he runs it himself with cutups that he made. And he's able to illustrate to his offensive teammates what he wants to do and why he wants to do it, because he did the work during the week in terms of being in the office, going through the game film. So that's the kind of guy you're getting, and he's also a phenomenal talent.
All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight that put at least $20 into their account while using promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. So that's a $40 value for just $20. And you'll get that opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy football and prop games at one of the fastest-growing fantasy sports sites in the USA, in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. PFF and Sunday Night Football's Chris Collinsworth is teaming up with one of the best players on and off the field, 49ers All-Pro cornerback Richard Sherman. The Chris Collinsworth podcast featuring Richard Sherman is available now wherever you find your podcasts. They will provide the most interesting football conversation in sports every week. And sometimes that means the discussion will venture off the field too. Additionally, Chris will be taking a dive into the game of football as he sees it, inviting in the best and brightest to talk about everything that is happening in the great game of football. Mark your calendars. You do not want to miss the best 60 minutes of insight this season. In these uncertain times, life is full of questions like, when should I start thinking about life insurance? But however difficult these questions may be, Western and Southern can help you answer them. Backed by over 130 years of experience, together, we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, investments.
Yeah, that's pretty damn impressive. Seth and I, just about every week, we talk about how a lot of these college offenses are basically quarterback proof now because so much gets decided for you. You know, before you even break the huddle, or now teams aren't even huddling. So everything is decided for you from the sideline. You know, too high to the boundary, we're going to do this. If you see a rotation, we're doing this. We're not even going to allow you the opportunity to think about this. If we really want to pass the ball down the field, we're going 7-man protection no matter what. So it's interesting and impressive to hear that, you know, North Dakota State, being the machine that it is, would still be able to trust a quarterback to, you know, handle so much of that in the passing game.
They've made it easy to look bad at made it easy to be a bad quarterback and look successful.
Right.
You mentioned, you know, Trey being a type of guy like a modern type of guy you want in the NFL offense right now. And I think you had tweeted, I'm going to paraphrase, either you tweeted it or I heard you on a podcast say something about how the thing with the modern quarterback and what it means. And so when we talk about athleticism and stuff like that is, you're not going to be right. Again, I'm paraphrasing. I'm probably adding my own opinion. You're not always going to be right with what the defense is trying to do to you, especially early in your career. Yeah, when you're Drew Brees, Tom Brady, you're getting it right all the time. Yeah, we get it. But you're in the league 20 years. When you're early, you need the ability to not be right pre-snap, but still make it right post-snap with athleticism, with this and that. So like, yeah, am I on the right page with what you said, you know, when I was paraphrasing you?
Yeah, all I'm saying is like, these guys without enough reps to have seen what defenses are doing, they can't be right all the time mentally. So they're going to have some physical attributes. They're going to get them out of bad situations. And one of the things that I think about when that statement exactly is Deshaun versus the Buffalo Bills. In overtime, they bring nickel pressure. He doesn't see it. He's got a free shot on him. He shrugs him off, scrambles, throws a pass, and they end up winning that game, right? 90% of the quarterbacks in the league, that's a sack, -7. You punt the ball, very good chance you end up losing that game. So those are kind of plays that you got to be able to make if you want to be a quarterback in 2021, especially a young quarterback. Like, we're not going to see the days of the old crusties. No mobility guys make it to the NFL.
That actually kind of rolls right into my next question. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, the athletic profile for a lot of these guys has changed in the last 10 to 15 years. And I know that for me locally, like I live in San Diego. So for me locally, like whether it's been like a George Whitfield at certain points or a Keeley Smith, who works with a lot of our high school guys, I see a lot of the videos they post about getting quarterbacks more comfortable with being off of their platform.
So is it, would you say that that's maybe the number one thing that you're working on now with younger guys, is to kind of divorce themselves from the idea that, oh, I'm taking this drop, I'm making my hitch, and everything is going to time up perfectly?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's one of like the staples of the things that I do. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've been able to be so successful, is because I train in a way that allows guys to work on a lot of different things, so from a lot of different platforms and a lot of different angles. Also being able to get off their spot and get to a position where they can throw. So that's what's allowed us to be really successful in the way that I train. So I've been excited to kind of see the evolution of that and kind of how others continue to work that into their training methodology.
Yeah, one of the things that I had done, you know, in my last few years coaching quarterbacks, was I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I wasn't doing that type of stuff. We were doing all the movement drills like everyone does, you know, all that stuff around the bags and stuff. I got a video from John Shoup, who was like the OC for the Bears like 25 years ago. And I was like doing his drills. But anyways, one of the things I added, and I probably didn't do enough, was like, hey, you know, like, here's some weird positions to throw the football in. And if we do it in practice enough, if we force you to do it, like, hey, you know what, we're going to finish the drill, and instead of just settling and throwing the football, I want you to like almost like lean over and throw it sidearm. I want you to do this, and I want you to move around, think there's a rusher on you, and throw it this way. Just kind of like get them involved with different movements that you usually don't do in drills, but you know that happen in a game. And for some reason, and I don't know, you know, maybe, I don't know if you feel the same way, but we were not doing that as quarterback coaches, however long ago that was.
We didn't give athletes the freedom to learn how to be creative, is kind of how I look at it, right? In my workouts all the time, I'm encouraging guys to fail by trying new things, putting them in awkward positions, letting them explore like their limitations, right? Because you got to be able to understand what you can really do. And one of the things that I do is like, I've never yelled at a guy that I trained, right? That's not something I do, because I want to encourage them to try new things. I think SC people coach the position wrong. They want to be able to say, we're doing it in this structure every single time. And that's not how guys work. And that's not what's going to allow the best of the best to be really successful.
So you kind of touched on something that I was interested in as well, you know, especially for young quarterbacks who look like Quincy, look like myself, you know, they may not have access to the quarterback training, you know, right. they may not have the access to like, you know, that type of quarterback trainer right off the bat. So, you know, when I was a kid, I always found myself gravitating towards Black quarterbacks, A, for obvious reasons, and B, because there was more of a willingness to kind of improvise, maybe be a little bit more creative, to throw from those different arm slots that might be a little bit more unconventional. And I think that now we're starting to see that that's gone from a demerit on somebody's scouting profile to now being a feature. So, you know, when you're working with guys, is there almost like an unlearning process that you have to go through, trying to get guys from being, you know, maybe quarterback robots into freeing themselves back up and being a little bit more creative?
Man, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of guys that I get since like sixth, seventh grade. And that sounds really funny. Like, oh, you have this. I'm like, well, I met most of them like at least by ninth grade, like I at least seen them. So I don't have to do that much unlearning. I tend to be fortunate enough to get guys early enough where I can start implementing some of my teaching and my methodology really early.
So, you know, you're like the private quarterback guy. I know you used to coach. I know you were at UCLA and some other places. Now, I don't know if this happens everywhere. I know it happens here, and I'm assuming it happens everywhere. But
sure happens here. I can tell you.
You feel an adversarial relationship with OCs and quarterback coaches?
It really depends on like the level of coach, right? That's a big deal. I actually get more opposition from high school high school coaches. I get a bit of opposition from college coaches. NFL coaches, not so much, but I'm not sure if the NFL coaches don't give me opposition because they know that the guy that they would be opposing actually could get them fired. So that's a little bit of a different situation. There's some colleges that I have really good relationships with, right? And they not encourage your guys to go to me. And It may be because they know that I have guys in my pipeline and it may be advantageous to them in the future. But very rarely do I have to deal with a lot of coaches at the higher levels who don't want their guys working with me. More so than anything, I get resistance by high school coaches, which I think is a bit wild, but I understand it's their guys. They want to, you know, put their thumbprint on them.
Oh, they're talking shit behind your back. Like, don't even worry about it. Like that, I guarantee you. Like that's happening for
it's
sure.
It's all so. Cool. It's all cool. I ain't tripping. I know that people are talking shit. I'm here for it. I deal with it a lot on Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. I have this question that's gonna get me canceled. So, but I'm gonna say it anyways. Something that I've noticed with, you know, Deontay said people who look like you two guys with black quarterbacks is there seems to be a lot of sidearm throwers. And maybe it's just, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just using a few guys. I always think about Lamar. I think about Vince Young. I think about, I bet you're training him, Jeff Sims in Atlanta. I think about these type of guys. There's another one I can't remember, but Aaron Brooks, we talked about, me and Deontay talked about him. Like this, there's like a sidearm thing, unbelievable arm talent, but it's a sidearm release when, you know, we talk about, okay, what do you want to be perfect? We want to be over the top. We want to get to zero. You know what I mean? Like we want to do all that stuff. But is that something? So my theory, and again, I'm probably wrong about this, but my theory is, you know, what Deontay talked about, lack of big time coaching, lack of individualized coaching at an early age. So you end up with that sidearm stuff rather than the guys who get, who have probably more money to spend on people like you and stuff like that, who get their arm up a little bit more and they get that three quarters release and stuff like that. Is that a thing or am I making this up?
No. I think that sometimes naturally people tend to go like sidearm, like that's just a natural way that you go. I think that people sometimes coach it the wrong way and are trying to tell you, get your arm up, 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 up. And I would disagree with that. One of the most natural throws in the NFL, Mahomes, is probably like really three quarters, right? It was, but he taught himself. He never had a private quarterback instructor or anything like that. Deshaun's even like three quarters, and I would never like encourage him to get higher. I think that, yeah, it's a lot to do with people who got private instruction. And a lot of those people, I think, got private instruction that wasn't very helpful. And they saw a lot of the things that you were just talking about that encouraged them to get right over the top. And I think that that's actually been to their detriment. I think having a private quarterback instructor who teaches you the wrong thing is far worse than not having a private instructor at all. It puts you in a situation that prohibits you from reaching your maximum potential. So it's kind of interesting to see, but I do agree with your statement on that.
I had one more question about releases, and you kind of brought up Lamar. He's one of these guys. I feel like I'm maybe seeing these more of these guys now in the NFL and at the college level than I did before. But this kind of variation between guys who have more traditional releases and then maybe kind of like your wrist flick guys who can still generate velocity without having, you know, maybe a more complete arm motion. So when you see, well, A, I'm going to guess that you don't mess around too much with guys' releases unless it's, you know, they're at injury risk. But when you're evaluating guys who have these different kind of variations in their releases, how much do you think you can generate more arm strength with their release? Or is there like a cap based on how you throw the ball?
Well, I think that a large majority of your arm strength is going to come from your legs or your lower half than your arm. Right. So I'm really, as long as your release is adequate and it puts you in a position where you can make all the throws that you need to make, I'm not going to tinker too much, especially with really high level guys. If you're like a young kid and you're doing something funky, we'll talk. But if you're a college quarterback who's managed to be really successful, then like Phillip Rivers has the funkiest release on anybody, right? And he's managed to be really successful, but he does a good job of generating force. He gets to some good spots in his throwing motion and it allowed him to be successful for a long time. So I'm not a guy who's going to it's not a dictatorship with me.
Right.
It's always a constant communication. How can I help you be better? What do you feel like you need to get fixed? And let's fix it together.
So you talk about lower body, and I think the lower body is something that's changed in terms of coaching and technique and stuff. I think that's probably changed the most over the past decade, let's say. Because I remember when I started, we were just having the kid, you know, follow through. Mm-hmm. Like getting the whole, like the body was connected as one, and we were all trying to put all that weight behind you and then throw it all forward. Just put it out there.
It was like a linear movement too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's changed. So I was curious, you know, we talk about now disassociating like the top half and the bottom half and stuff like that. How to create torque. Like, is that something that you're more like the technique wise that you're more trying to work on than the arm? Or is that same stuff with the arm? Like it's not a dictatorship. We're still going to work on it. Or is there stuff that you find is something you kind of don't have have to do?
If there's some non-negotiables, right? And then, yeah, some non-negotiables, and that's ability to internally rotate, load up your inside hip, and be able to drive force into the ground, right? And if I see a guy who does an action that brings their back foot way in front of their front foot at the finish of their throw, then that would be a no for me, right? Because then you don't have the ability to stop fast. What generates energy for really good quarterbacks is the ability to explode, but also the ability to stop suddenly, right? Sudden start, sudden stop. And that's what allows you to really create force and generate energy on a football. So that's my thing, is like the lower body is where we make our hay. And that's what's going to allow you to be the best quarterback possible.
So the last thing I wanted to ask you then, and I do want to take some time to really focus on the lower body, because that is obviously, I think, the more important piece of it, or at least I think everybody has an idea of what a quarterback should look like from the upper body. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at guys, is there somebody, and you're free to plug the guys that you work with, I'm not mad at that at all. Are there guys from like a footwork, you know, how they're able to transfer weight in their throw, how they navigate the pocket? Which guys do you look at when you see them, you're like, oh, that's ideal, or as close to ideal as it gets?
There's two guys. Deshaun and Mahomes are really ideal in terms of their ability to resist rotation. What I'll say that, like, you see the initial movement of their back foot, it looks like it's going back almost. Like the first mm-hmm. thing that happens, and it's freaky, right? But that's because they're putting a lot of force in the ground and keeping it back. And it's weird because I talk about Deshaun in that way, and he does a really good job of that in games, not as great a job in a workout, right? So that's something that we want to work on, is making sure we're consistent there. You see Pat Mahomes do that really, really consistently. And then I think that what Aaron Rodgers does is cool. I don't have a high enough understanding of exactly what's going on, but I think that what he does is creates a feeling of almost sitting down, and he does a really good job of resisting rotation too. So I really like to watch him throw. And then the last guy we'll talk about, and he may be better than all the guys that I mentioned before, is Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is phenomenal in his lower half.
Yeah.
And I think that comes a lot from hitting a baseball, not throwing one.
I was going to say, I think that the baseball background helps a lot with that, especially since he's not a physically overwhelming person.
Yeah. He's explosive as heck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you had tweeted about the front foot and how it doesn't, because that's another thing we used to teach.
Point your front toe to the target, then we got problems. And I think there's still guys teaching it.
Yeah, because you're just opening yourself up. Like you can't stop yourself. Like you're talking about the deceleration process doesn't happen.
You've already started your external rotation, and you don't have a chance. That's going to get you throwing sidearm more than anything, is when you really fly your front shoulder open and start externally rotating too early.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy that I think I didn't realize this because I'm a little too young for him, but Marino, when he threw, you want to talk about deceleration, you want to talk about stopping the whole process. The thing is, he wasn't taught that, because we're talking about the 70s, so no one was teaching him that stuff. Unbelievable.
Freaky. It looks like a golfer almost, how well he does it. It stops his front shot.
All right, Quincy, thank you for
Appreciate you guys having me on, man.
This was a great time.
I love talking quarterback, so whenever, I'm always down.
All right, cool. Thank you.
All right. Get up, T. Let's go to work.
All right. That was Quincy Avery of QB Takeover live on the practice field. Deontay, are you going to start the linebacker takeover business anytime soon?
I don't know. Every time I check, I feel like we matter less and less. So there's a reason why I'm coaching DBs now, man. They're trying to squeeze me out of this industry.
You know, Mike, everyone has their own like narrative about themselves and stuff like that. My really dumb narrative about myself is I always feel how lucky I got that I just happened to be around quarterbacks a lot. And it just happens that quarterbacks are the most important position, especially in the modern NFL. Maybe 35 years ago, it was the running backs and stuff like that. And your linebackers, maybe, but I just feel like, I'm like, man, I got so like, I just happened to be a skinny kid. So I was around the quarterbacks, you know?
So you know what's like, what's crazy about that is that I feel like my football career from high school to college happened at the exact same time that people with my body type started changing positions. And I feel like I got caught. Like, to me, if I were to go back now, or if I were a coach going back to look at myself as a 16, 17 year old, I would tell them you should play nickel. Like, I ran an 11.3 in 100, so like I had the speed to do it, you know, at least at the level of football that I was playing at, I had the speed to be like that big safety type, big nickel type. And for whatever reason, I had in my head, like, still the images of like Terrell Suggs, Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, all of those types of guys, thinking that, hey, maybe if I turn myself into this 235, 240 pound guy, I can still be the athlete that I want to be and play in the box. And obviously, you know, I graduated in 2011. So you guys have to think like where the game of football went from 2009 when I started playing varsity football all the way up until 2014 when I stopped playing college football. Like, that was a humongous shift. So, you know, like, that was really when body type started changing in the sport. And if I could go back now, that is the one thing I would for sure change.
You know, it's funny, like, I always try and big up Canadian football a bit, but because of the there only being three downs and you're basically losing first down, right? So every drive starts second and 10 when you really think about it. Right. That means you're throwing the ball even at the lower levels. Like, now some of the lower levels do play four down because the quarterbacks aren't good enough. But, you know, once you get into the three down world in university, it's like,
you're basically always in a must convert situation.
You got to throw the football. Yeah, and guess what that means? So when you're always throwing the football, what does that mean to a defense? It means that Sam becomes a nickel like 20 years ago. You know what I mean? That's what's changed. And then the Will, like, dude, did you see these some rotations you get with the Will running to the post? Like, because the Will is a smaller body too. And even now the Mike gets smaller. And that's happened in the NFL too. It just happened at a process faster in Canada just because of the rule change, the rule differences. There's nothing more than that. But yeah, I think that's what the game has changed tremendously, is body types are changing so much on defense in the secondary off-ball positions.